So I'm joined by Todd Ashton. He is the head of East and South Southern Africa at Ericsson, and we're going to get a sense of what Ericsson is doing in the region. Ericsson has traditionally been one of the large networking companies around the world. I remember back in the day, my first introduction to Ericsson, like so many people of my generation, was around cell phones. But you know, there's so much more to the business, and right now I think you know, networking equipment is probably one of the biggest things that they do. So Todd, greetings to you today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
So I think a good place for us to start is just getting a sense of when we talk about Ericsson in this region, right? What does the shape of the business look like?
A lot of people got to know Ericsson through the cell phone business. But Ericsson has always been really much more sort of a business-to-business technology type company.
Yeah.
But, I mean, interesting to know. I mean, when you turn on Bluetooth, that's an Ericsson patent. When you swipe on the phone, that's an Ericsson patent. So we still are heavily providing that type of technology to these players, but we're not participating in the consumer business. Our business is really around, if we talk about Africa and solving sort of specific problems in Africa, it's about really getting sort of 4G as ubiquitous as possible. A very good 4G is required to really start to succeed with 5G in the different countries. So that's sort of one general thing. But you know, the reason I moved to Africa from Southeast Asia is I saw this opportunity based on what I learned in COVID, with broadband being recognized finally as a basic human right. I saw this opportunity to use 4G and eventually 5G to start delivering broadband in areas where fiber doesn't make sense. And that's something that we've been driving across the continent. I believe it's a very good complement to what can be done with broadband if we talk about last mile access. And it's relevant here in South Africa. It's relevant in most of the sub-Saharan African countries. The other area that I see still emerging, but I mean, we work, for example, with a company called Comsol, who's like a CSP, but they're also SI expert, let's say, for mining. And there we're doing private 5G networks to solve some specific use cases for the mines. I mean, one is connectivity, but the main thing is more like occupational health and safety type of use cases. Yeah. So basically to make mining more safe, more humane. So I think, you know, those are some of the areas where we see technology move in. And I think the final area where we talked about sort of inclusivity of broadband, but then there's the other part about financial inclusion and for the unbanked. And there, you know, we work with a lot of customers such as MTN, where we do mobile money. And we really have seen that ecosystem based on these type of mobile wallets. I mean, they've been really successful in helping the unbanked become more banked, helping women become more active in the economy. And we think that's also very important in terms of leading to more growth economically for the countries.
One of the things that I'm most curious about is when it comes to, I guess, your business in the region, right? We often think about when we think about networking equipment, you know, I'm thinking radio access networks. I'm thinking about the dishes that are on the cell phone towers. You're thinking routers, switching, you know, those types of things. But also, you know, in the sense that you've just given us now, you're talking about platforms. Because I do remember an announcement at some point, you correct me if I'm wrong, where I think MTN is using your platform around, you know, their mobile money.
Correct.
So in a sense like that, is that on the mobile money side, is that more a software platform, you know, type of thing? And I ask that because we primarily, you know,
think of
you guys, you know, from a hardware sense.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, look, even the hardware business is going more to becoming a global platform play, and I'll come back to that. But you're right. I mean, what we provide on mobile money, you could say back in the core networks, I mean, these are all purely software defined now. So whatever you know, you need to be found and you're getting YouTube to your phone, that's all software. But now even the hardware on the tower, and I'll give a few examples. So, I mean, first of all, we've done some R&D that's specific for Africa. We launched the first products a few years ago, and we're actually just today or tomorrow launching another set. And what they're doing, and they're addressing specific challenges in Africa that could come to cost of power, availability of power, cost of having too much weight in the tower. So we've come up with some innovations where, to start with, one radio could solve two spectrum bands, three sectors. So that would have been done by six radios in the past, and now it's down to one, which reduced the power consumption by 50%, reduced tower load by more than 50%. That's very relevant because the less our customers have to spend on sort of the operational expense around the tower, the more they're able to invest in building out 4G coverage and 5G. But the other part of the software, again, now is we developed some, you can call whatever buzzword you want, machine learning, AI software feature, has the ability now to go into something called deep sleep. So basically, imagine night, and if there's no device connected to that sector at that time, that radio will power down, saving the energy. The moment the phone comes into the sector, it powers back up again. That's just one example. So even what we know traditionally as the hardware is becoming much more software defined. And then where we think it's going further is that those networks that can keep track of location, the microwave networks that we provide to Vodacom, you can find rain attenuation from them, so you can figure out what's raining. And then the mobile operators have mobile money. So imagine a use case where somebody gets into a car accident because the road's wet. If all the different aspects of the network are exposed, you would be able to find out location of the car. If it was raining or not, you would get a picture from the phone on the damage, and then you would be able to immediately settle an insurance claim using mobile money. And all of those things are things that the mobile operators have. But that's why we see software becoming more and more important end-to-end, so from mobile money up into the radio.
And all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the region, you know, that you're primarily working on, obviously there's relationships, like you said, you've got Vodacom, you've got MTN. Those are the ones that we know, you know, locally. Are you working with the others in South Africa, and also when it comes to the continent, you know, who are the other big clients?
Sure. So I mean, we have big customers, small customers. I mean, you know, right now in South Africa, it's really MTN, Vodacom, and Comsol. But I mean, as you just saw, I was with some of the other guys here. And of course, we work with the industry to help drive. If we may not have any business, we help drive policies to make sure there can be growth for the industry, right? But, you know, if I look across the continent, I mean, I get some big markets. I mean, we see one company called Axian, run by Hassanein. I mean, he's doing a lot of investments in different countries in Africa, Senegal. He's done a big investment in Tanzania. I was there last week. You know, that's another example. You got a lot of our long-term partners, such as Econet and Zim. Of course, you've got the players like Safaricom and in Kenya. You've got Airtel across Africa. You've got Orange across Africa. So we're quite diversified in terms of the in terms of the customer base. And that's just to name a few. We can go all the way up to Morocco and Rocktel. So it's many. I think one of the most exciting things I've done during my time is participating in the liberalization of Ethiopia.
Nice.
And seeing not just what Safaricom's entrance has meant, but also the way Ethiotel has quickly transformed from being a, you know, really state-owned type company with maybe the negative consequences or connotations you might get from that, to becoming much more agile. And they went from zero to more than 45 million Telebir customers, and Telebir is mobile money, in 2 years. So, and that has changed completely the landscape in Ethiopia.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I'm most curious about, it's, we're getting a little bit into the weeds, but the geek in me is just keen to understand this. You know, over time, we've seen a lot of evolution when it comes to how operators build their networks. You know, once upon a time, it was about copper and the ground.
Yeah.
Then at some point, it became about towers, right? And we've seen a lot of mobile operators offloading their tower portfolios to independents, IHS, you know, ATC,
yes.
You know, all of those, Helios and others, right? And but more than anything else, it's the infrastructure. When you go to a site, you normally see maybe two or three operators using one, you know, network tower. But when it comes now to the worlds that you're talking about, where so many things are becoming, you know, software defined, you know, could we in future find a situation where perhaps MTN, Vodacom come to an Ericsson and say, hey, instead of us buying, you know, six different radios, can you give us one radio? And then you guys can, you know.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, on a broader scale, we haven't seen too many cases globally where that's really worked out.
Okay.
But on from a rural or deep rural perspective,
yeah,
where the business case just simply will not make sense for, let's say, three mobile operators to invest. There they will do a model where, let's say, Vodacom builds a tower. The vendor puts the equipment, and then you do some sharing in the core network, basically, mm-hmm. so that everyone can ride on that Vodacom tower and that investment. So in that case, that is happening. But it's really more of a rural, deep rural. And it's a good model for solving the fact that the business case is a very long tail. So you have to use your universal service provision fund, and then, you know, you find ways to make it work.
And then the other one that I was also curious about, maybe drawing from, you said Southeast Asia. I'm not sure which country you're talking about, but I visited Thailand recently. Mm. And one of the things that I found most interesting about Thailand is how ubiquitous 5G coverage is. Yeah. At least, you know, in certain cases, I know they're calling it 5G, but it's not true 5G. Yeah, it's sort of, you know, LTE plus. But there's really great coverage of that type of network. But yeah,
you get the logo on your phone, but yes. I might not be using too much spectrum to get the speeds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see 5G proliferating as a wide-ranging consumer type of offering where it just becomes ubiquitous type of coverage, or is the future just make sure everyone is on an LTE, you know, so, coverage layer? Yeah.
So, I mean, look, from my time in Southeast Asia, you know, what I saw when we started doing 4G back in 2012, 2013, Bangladesh, 2018, Indonesia around 2013. I mean, you know, what we saw with 4G is, I mean, there were five unicorns created, mobile-based in Indonesia, which shows the extreme power that getting that kind of connectivity will give you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so from a consumer perspective, if you think of a place like Lagos, where they have had 4G for a long time, the thing that is the biggest killer for a mobile operator is having to build a new tower. So, because the lifetime cost of that tower is very high. So it's not the electronics, it's everything else. So imagine Lagos, which is quite congested, may not be able to find physically where you can put a new tower. So the only thing left to do then is the government needs to allocate spectrum, and then you put 5G in that tower. And what happens then is your high-end customers who have a 5G phone, immediately all their data consumption goes to 5G, and you reduce the congestion on 4G. So that's for now probably the main use case. But then, as I said, I think in terms of solving sort of a home broadband problem, solving a broadband problem for small to medium enterprise, I mean, you know, a kiosk somewhere, I really believe 5G will become more and more the technology that is providing that type of broadband, where maybe the business case for fiber doesn't make sense. Maybe it's too expensive a satellite. But to get there on top of the spectrum, which we can't make that too expensive, also duties on imports for devices,
yeah,
right? And not just the mobile phone, but I mean the device that you might use for 5G to get home broadband, right? And I think that's one of the messages I'm always, working with the industry and working with the public sector and the government officials is if you know the massive economic impact that this technology has, what it means for financial inclusion, if we know these things, then we should be enabling, and then we should really think through our policies. A lot of places it's where maybe a little bit too protectionist, try to reduce those tariffs so you can get more and more affordable devices into people's hands so they can afford it. I think that's still one of the barriers why 4G hasn't gone completely ubiquitous 100% in Africa.
All right. Maybe where we can end off, maybe tying everything that we have together, you know, the future of networks, 4G, LTE, all of this stuff. At the end of the day, we are just trying to make sure that people are connected. And right. A big piece of the debate at the moment is, you know, satellite, right? What's the place of Ericsson when it comes to nowadays people, when you talk to the networking guys, they're talking about having base station in the air, you know. Well, what's Ericsson's place in that?
Actually, we announced there's a few things happening in the standardization bodies. There's some things ongoing where soon your phone will be able to connect to this low orbiting satellite. We announced a partnership several years ago with an American company called, maybe they're French, Thales, T-H-A-L-E-S.
Yeah.
So we definitely think there's going to be a place for that type of service to help deal with some of the rural coverage things. I think the other thing that's important is it should be a bit of a level playing field for everyone who wants to do the networking. So, I mean, a mobile operator has to take a lot of costs to do KYC, anti-money laundering, subscriber registration, yeah. Spectrum purchase, etc. And I think it's just important that if the satellite players are in there as well, that they should be have the same sort of playing field so they don't get away with a different cost structure.
Mm. All right. So that's where we end off. It has been a good discussion. Thank you so much to Todd for giving us some insight into what's going on in the world of Ericsson, but more importantly, giving us a sense of what the landscape looks like in terms of networking, you know, in the region and, you know, how learnings from different parts of the world. He is coming, you know, has had some experience in Southeast Asia and, you know, he sees some parallels and saying, you know, there's some holes that can be plugged in Africa and, you know, coming up. But he says that the solutions need to be native, you know, to this particular region. Also very interesting getting a sense of how a business like Ericsson has evolved over time, still providing the hardware, but software has become, you know, such an important part of that. I think we talk about software-defined networks and, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, going forward, you know, he's saying we're going to see, you know, a lot more of that. Also getting a sense, you know, 4G, 5G, we see a lot of buzzwords being thrown around. But, you know, when it comes to cities in Africa, like how realistic is it, you know, to cover an entire city in 5G? But at the base, let's at least make sure that people are at a 4G or LTE level. Let's, you know, find ways of driving more efficient traffic and then also at the same time making sure that the different types of applications, whether that's mobile money, you know, or whether it's you and I, someone listening to this podcast right now, you know, that ability to, you know, send and receive messages on their devices becomes key. So that's been it. Thank you so much. We're in conversation with Todd Ashton. He is the head of Ericsson in South and East Africa. Todd, thank you so much for being with
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. This has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.